really lovely to be with you today. Such a privilege, and we really want to thank you for your lovely welcome. It's always great to meet more family. We're just all family here today, aren't we? because of time, I'm not really going to share much about my background. Just really to say that I gave my life to the Lord when I was 14. God bless the Sunday school teachers. I thought I was getting too big for Sunday school, and I left. But my teacher had won my heart, really, and she came to the house, and she said, "I'll take you to a grown-up meeting." And she took me to hear a wet missionary called Ken Terhoven. And there, my sister and my two friends and I went forward to give our lives to the Lord. So it's a number of years ago now. But, you know, God brings people into our lives, doesn't he, to further his purposes for what he wants from us. And it was just an amazing time. I met Mick. He was 17, and he just got saved in completely different circumstances. And we met at a coffee bar. And, you know, we had people, really good beginnings, you know, people who were real visionaries. And they had us always about reaching out for the lost. It was always evangelism and street evangelism. They got us involved in all sorts of things. And we were so grateful to those people who really envisioned us at a very early age and gave us opportunities really as well to grow at that time. But going over now, we have two children, a son and a daughter. And today I want to just share something that a big part really of our lives these last years. But in August 2002, it was August the 27th, and I came home to the news that our son Paul had been murdered in a knife attack in Liverpool. And as you can imagine, I remember my mum saying to me, "How could God allow that to happen to you?" She said, "You go to church, you know, and you have this life with God, and yet somehow this has happened to you." And it was just such a shock for everyone. And in that moment when I heard those words, our lives just changed so completely. And I can remember just thinking, I just need to hear from God. You know, it didn't matter what anybody else had to say, but I desperately wanted to know that from God, because I knew he would have something to say in this. And I remember going upstairs and just kneeling down in the bathroom and saying to the Lord, "Father, they've killed my son and I don't know what to do." And it's just that cry of the heart, isn't it? Just that cry of help. And I said, "Please speak to me. Just anything, just tell me something." And in the next instant, he spoke two things, very simple things, not earth-shattering. He didn't go on and on and on. He just simply, one of them was a question, and he said, "Will you trust me?" And that's a really important question, because, you know, as Christians, we just, you know, we say, "Of course I trust God. Of course I believe. Of course I trust in my life." But, you know, the Lord didn't go on until I'd answered. And it was like a plea. "Will you trust me in this?" And, you know, I remember just lifting my hand and saying, "Yes, Lord." And I was only too glad to be able to put my trust in him, because I didn't know how I was going to get through the next hour, let alone the rest of my life. And I can remember I saw this in a magazine. And this probably expresses a lot. It says, "Faith is trusting God like this." I don't know whether you can see that. But it's a picture of somebody who's just free-falling. And look at the absolute trust, just the way he's falling there. But he's trusting. But it also is a picture of me, to me, of absolute surrender. It just looks like I'm just surrendering to this experience. And that was really how I felt. It was such a relief that God hadn't asked anything hard of me. He just simply asked me to trust. And the next thing he said was just as simple, a bit like when I was 14. It was all about trusting and following. And the Lord just said, follow me. And that was it. And you know, Jeremiah 29:11, as we know, says, for I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Not plans for harm, but to give you hope and a future. And so I knew that I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that God had a plan in mind for this time of my life. And it was just a weight lifted off my shoulders. And I remember standing, and faith just rose in my heart that although I was absolutely devastated, broken, grief-stricken, all of those things you can imagine, but I just knew I was going to be okay. I didn't know how God was going to help. I just knew he would. And that's important for us to know, isn't it? A short time later, just 6 weeks later, again, God just brought something new into my life. When I say me, I'm talking about Mick and I as a couple. And we went to Kingsway Church that you will have heard of. And they had something called IMPACT, which stands for In Merseyside, Police and Church Together. And it was just weeks since we'd lost our son, but I just felt compelled to go to this meeting. And I won't talk too much about it, but just sufficient to say that within weeks, God brought me into this new work. Mick was pastoring at the time in a church in Wavertree. And I worked in like the nursery and mother and toddler and prayer group and things. But I just knew this was something for me. The timing was so perfect. And so when I came out of that meeting, I was asked to just be involved in one of the six areas of Merseyside. It was Liverpool South. And they would give me a link in the police. And my role really was to get the church to pray. And so I would visit many churches, asking them just to pray for the police. And I would share testimony. And it really opened doors to lots of things at that time, to go and share in all sorts of places. But, you know, it was 4 years after that, and I often think God sort of goes at our pace sometimes. You know, I never felt rushed. I never felt had to be doing or anything like that. Everything just happened naturally, supernaturally. And as I was working with the police, one of the people on our mailing list, Jean Hughes from a church in Egbeth, her husband died, and I went to the funeral. And you know, I believe in divine appointments, do you? Where God just brings along our path someone who's going to further his purposes in our lives. And I met this man called Chris Tierney, and he was from Prison Fellowship. And he told me that he went into prisons, and I shared with him about what I was doing with the police. And we had a lovely conversation, and he just said, you know, well, I'll pray for the police, and maybe you can pray for prisons. And he said, knowing your story, would you be willing to come into Walton Prison to share your story as a victim of crime on this sycamore tree course? And I thought, well, this could be interesting, but actually it was life-changing for me. We have many life-changing situations, don't we? I had a life-changing experience when I met the Lord, but this was another life-changing experience. Because, you know, we always think we're going to be doing the same things as we're doing today, don't we? I was a pastor's wife, you know, involved in the church. And when I look back, I was probably too inward looking. You know, my history was one of outreach. But I think I'd become very inward looking at this time. But God was doing other things in my life. And when I look back, I can see how he prepared me for all these things that were to come along. And so he said, I'll get in touch at the beginning of next year. And it was just a few months away, really, and good to his word, he rang me up And in 2006, 4 years after working with the police, and we're still doing that, but God brought something new into my life. And the day came when I was to go into the prison, and then I changed my mind. You know, when you just think, oh, I don't know whether I can do this, but I'd committed to going. And so, as nervous as I was, and as weak as we've heard this morning about how weak we feel at times, I just felt so weak, and I felt in no fit state, really, to do anything. I felt on my way up to the gate, it's like a 10-minute walk, and I'm glad of that 10-minute walk, actually, because it helps you to focus on what's happening and what you're doing. But on that 10-minute walk, every step seemed to bring me nearer to thinking, this is like meeting the people who killed Paul. And I thought, I don't know how I'm going to feel when I get inside of here. But it just gave me that 10 minutes to pray and just to settle my heart. But even before I got to the gate at Walton, I could feel the tears. And I thought, it's not going to take much for me to cry here. But you know, everything in me wanted to prove God. Have you ever been in those situations where just... it has to work. The gospel has to work in this situation for me. It's no good what you do in other people's lives. Well, it is, but you know what I mean. You have to have it real in your own life. And everything in me just wanted to prove God that in my situation, as huge and as dreadful as it was, you are Lord. And I've walked it with the Lord 36 years up to this time. And so I'd proved him over and over and over in so many ways, so many times. And he was always faithful. And we stand before you here today because of not my faithfulness to him, but of his faithfulness to us. And it amazes me. And as I made my way to the gate, I had chewing gum, I remember. And I'd never been to a prison, and he said, oh, you can't chew gum in here. And I didn't understand, but I just got rid of it. I was told later that sometimes people hide things in chewing gum. You know, they come up with all sorts of creative ways. But you know, I was never on my own, because with prison fellowship, you feel safe because you're part of a team. And I have never been on my own in the prison ever. And I was glad as I introduced myself to the team as I went in. And Stephen, as always, has been wonderful in making me feel safe and secure and just, you know, it'll be fine. And he's always been that amazing encouragement. But, you know, for a woman walking into a man's prison, it's very intimidating. You know, I was walking up this way just following Stephen and the team. And coming down towards me were all these men. It happened to be a time when they were moving around the prison. And it was so noisy. You know, there's no carpets in prison to soften the sound. It was just noise. It was men shouting to each other. It was the guards and officers who were shouting instructions. It was just chaotic to me in my mind. It was, this is chaotic. And I remember saying to the Lord, I don't know what you've brought me to, but just get me through it. We came to the chapel where the course was to take place. And as we sat down, we had a prayer time. And I could feel the tears, and I couldn't stop them. And this was before anything. You know, I was just so overwhelmed by where I was and what was about to happen. I was just crying, and you know when your throat aches because you're trying not to cry, you're trying to hold in all your emotion, and my throat was really throbbing, and in the end I just cried. I couldn't do anything more than that. And you know, one of the first people who walked in to be on the course was this young man, and I thought, oh, he looks a bit rough. But you know, when I looked at his eyes, he looked over and he sort of scowled at me. But his eyes looked empty. I just thought, what an empty young man. He looked like he was on drugs. He just looked spaced out. And I just remembered him. There were 14 people on the course, and as they came in, different ages, they sat in a semicircle. And each one, just some of them sat on the floor. It was Friday afternoon. It was very relaxed, and the team made them feel relaxed. It wasn't like the rest of the prison. The chapel seems to have that calming influence, you know. And as they sat, the chaplain got up and she shared that there should have been 15 people on this course, but there's only 14 here today because one young man tried to hang himself. And I'm sitting there listening to this, thinking, this is 20 minutes from where I live. And it was a whole new world that I knew nothing about. In all that those years as a Christian, we'd never prayed for prisons, never prayed for police up to this point. And God just began to open my eyes and open my heart. And it was just an amazing experience. As I say, I just really want to share that experience with you, because we talked this morning, and sorry, I don't know his name, the young man who did the children's bit, about when we're weak, then we're strong. And, you know, as weak as I felt at that point, God was doing deep things in me. And I actually spiritually felt the strongest I've ever felt. Isn't that strange? That physically you can have all sorts going on, but inside, I felt strong in the Lord. And it wasn't confidence in me, it was just confidence in the Lord. Well, I sobbed my way through my story. And I didn't leave any detail out. And I thought to myself, do you know, I can actually say anything I want here. Because the things I needed to share, things I needed to talk about, but I couldn't do it with friends or family, not even people at church. I just thought, if they saw how I am when I'm on my own with God, I'll frighten them. Because the grief was like so dreadful, I can't describe the grief I felt and the brokenness. And so I wouldn't have shared that depth of things with anyone, only the Lord. But then I found myself just being able to talk to these people. The people who people say are the scum of society, and I know they've done terrible things. I was only too aware that they'd done terrible things. On the way in, I remember seeing a door that said, Life a Unit, and thinking, oh my goodness, imagine coming into prison and going through that door, Life a Unit. But I found out later that all these people who were on this course had come from that Life a Unit. But, you know, I just looked out and I thought, you know what? You're just the people I need to speak to, because they understood. They were in there for similar crimes. And I remember thinking, I thought they'd all swear. I thought they'd talk while I was talking, that they'd be disinterested. But it was the opposite. You could hear a pin drop as the men just leaned forward to listen to my pain. And they thought, they told me afterwards, we thought as a victim of crime, you were going to come in and yell and shout at us and tell us off and be very angry. But, you know, they said, but you didn't. And, you know, I started off by saying, I'm not here to judge anyone. I'm just here to share my story. In such weakness, and yet in God's strength, we really do prove in our weakness God's strength, you know. We really do, because if you knew me, you would say it has to be God, because I know Lynn. It has to be God. And that's what it's like. And I was able to share every detail. But then I was able to share other things. And I felt in a privileged position that whereas others can't talk about the Lord at all, you know, you're not allowed now. There are so many things, because of so many religions, we have to show respect. So we say it's a faith-based course, but we can't promote Christianity. But God has his ways, doesn't he? And I remember saying, you know, there are two sides to my story. Because if I just told them all of that, what had happened, it wouldn't help them, and it certainly wouldn't help me. But I was able to share about God's comfort I could keep you here for weeks telling you story after story of God's comfort. So dramatic at times. But just that healing that had taken place in my life. And I shared really just about the comfort of God, but also the power of forgiveness. Now, Mick and I, as you can imagine, when your son has just been killed, even as a Christian, who wants to think about forgiveness? You know, it wasn't the first thing that came to my mind. But just the next day after Paul died, the police asked us to come and to do a press conference. And one of the men asked us a very important question. He said, "How do you feel about the people who've killed your son?" And Mick and I looked at each other, and this was just brought up just the next day. And I thank God for that. I believe it was God's intervention, because I think I could have struggled for years with unforgiveness. But he said, "How do you feel?" And Mick and I said, "We forgive them." And that was the moment, you know, because we were put on the spot. They were waiting for an answer. And we said, "We forgive them." And it was that choice we made, a bit like the choice to trust. We chose to forgive. And I think that has contributed to how well we've done over the years. It's such a huge thing. Now, when we mention in prison to the men who were there on life sentences, "We've forgiven the people who killed our son," they couldn't believe it. You know, people like us? And we said yes, and we talked about how we'd experienced God's forgiveness in our lives. And you know, I realized that as I was talking about the Lord, the tears had dried, and I haven't even noticed. But just everything switched. I went from being this broken, sobbing woman, such a mess, to now sharing about God. It was like being in a meeting. It was like this. And I forgot I was in a prison. Because the presence of God was so strong. Not that I took God in there. He was already there. And people have been going into prison ministry for years, generations before I have gone in. But, you know, I just felt God's presence. And although we didn't know each other on the course, we had a lot in common somehow. And there was just a connection. And it was the Holy Spirit connecting us. And just, they were so open. And they were so hungry. You know, Mick always used to say to me over the years, "If you want a ministry, find the hungry. Find those who are hungry." And these people were just hungry because they'd never gone to Sunday school. Some people didn't even know who Jesus was. How do you spell Jesus? You know, some things that we take for granted. I'd taken for granted that everybody knows about God. Everybody knows about Jesus dying on the cross, but these people didn't. They were from other religions. They were from no religion, no contact at all. But over the time, of course, I've met people who have got some connection to the church, but I'll tell you a story a bit in a moment. But you know, I just literally stood back and watched God do what he does, literally. You know, and I think sometimes we think that God calls us, you know, when we're feeling at our best. You know, you want to feel at your best. You know, coming here today, I've prepared because I want you to have the very best. And, you know, somehow we think, though, that we've always got to be strong. But I found now that actually God uses our vulnerability. You know, we used to have a neighbor and we used to mow his lawn, but he didn't like it. He said, "I'm not that old." So we learned not to do that. But he wanted to mow our lawn. And sometimes you have to just let people help you. And so talking to these men, I can't tell you how much it helped me as a victim of crime and happening what happened to us. I can't tell you how wonderful it was. It was like a counseling session. You know, I just let it all out and they listened and they just supported and helped, and it was amazing. You know, afterwards I was hugged to death. You're not really supposed to, but somehow it seemed appropriate. And it seemed appropriate to let the tears fall because they need to see the consequences of their actions. But I thought, you know, on the way in, I said, just get me through this. I thought this is a one-off. On the way out, I remember saying, God, please bring me back. And it was just, I was hooked. And so for 15 years now, we've been going into prisons. Mick, as I say, was pastoring. And so I went in this for a while on my own to different prisons. And then Mick came aside from pastoring and he began to come as well. And he felt the same. And, you know, we've done 179 of these courses now in 27 prisons up and down the country. And, you know, I was looking for good to come out of the death of our son. And this is the good. You know, when I talk about comfort, comfort came from a very unexpected source. Who would think that a prison would be a comfort to me? But it was. And you know, on week six, I've just brought, I didn't expect anything, but on week six, the men get to stand up and share what they've got from the course. And it's wonderful to be able, I was there 3 weeks later on week six, and I thought the young man who I said was first in, who looked deathly, you know, who had those empty eyes, he walked in again on week six, just 3 weeks later, and he beamed and he smiled. And I was shocked. I thought, that's not the same man. And all these other people came in and it was, hi, you know, hi. And we have name badges and, oh, and it was like meeting old friends. I thought, isn't this amazing? These are the same people that I met on week three, but they're different. Something's happened. God had just been ministering over the weeks on the course. And on week six, this man got up and he said, I've made this for Lynn and I'd just like to give it to her. Well, for me, it was like getting the Nobel Peace Prize. It was like, because I wasn't expecting anything. But you know, if you notice, it's not the story of my son that touched them so much as the story of God's son. And I've got pictures, poems, all sorts of things full of crosses because God touched them. And as I say, we meet all sorts of people in there. And I want to just share quickly just a couple of things. This man wrote, we do, as Stephen said, about the letter writing. And often we get to continue the conversation by letter because we're only there for such a short time. But this young man, he is from Haverick Prison. And he wrote to us and he said this, thank you for sharing your experience in losing your son, Paul. It brought back a lot of things in my life. And I'm happy to say that I've now forgiven the man who killed my father and the woman who killed my uncle. And it has lifted a lot of weight off my shoulders. Now, I can't tell you he's a Christian. I can't tell you that he's asked the Lord into his life. But the Bible talks about being saved. And, you know, these people, God worked in them before, you know, during and after. The Holy Spirit works where he will. The Spirit is there all the time. And you know, this man, I don't know, maybe the Lord has touched him deeply to give his life to the Lord, but he heard the story of forgiveness. And that has been so important. We also meet people who have had experience of the Lord. People who've backslidden, get involved in things. And this man from Gartry wrote to us. And he said, thank you for sharing your story. It touched me so much and has given me hope and faith for the future. It is because of you both and your love and forgiveness that I found my faith again in God. And he came back to the Lord. I mean, I could share lots and lots of stories with you. I just wanted to share as well one final one. This might be an odd, this might be an odd thing you might think for someone to give you. But there was an older man there, and he spoke to me on week six, and he said, I can't write letters and poems and make things. That's not me. But he said, I remembered you saying about your son loved fishing. And he said, and so I thought I'd bring a tin of salmon, because a tin of salmon was a posh meal in our house, and we only had it on a Sunday. And this isn't the actual tin, that's in my loft, safely away in a box. And I didn't have time this morning, I only thought about sharing this morning. But it was about half the size of that, and I'll never use it because of how precious it is. It's as precious as this. Sometimes it's a scrappy bit of paper with sorry on. You know, lots and lots of things. But I remember when I talked to this elderly man, and he said, I've been in and out of prison all my life. I'm just a violent man. But he said, my dad went to David Street Chapel in Liverpool 8, and he was a Sunday school teacher. And he said, I just remember the story of the bread and the fish, and that was hence the salmon as well. And I remember just seeing out the corner of my eye a banner in the chapel that said, if any man is in Christ, he is a new creation. All things pass away and all things become new. And I pointed it out to him and I said, you know, you've heard the gospel many times probably, and you're in here, but God has never forgotten you. And he hasn't. You know, God never lets go. Sometimes we give up on people. God never gives up on people. And, you know, I just felt like the Lord just touched this man again with his love and reminded him of his father who'd long gone now. And I shared that story in another church. And after that, this lady in her 80s came up to me afterwards and she said, I can't believe it, she said. Me and a few of the ladies here, we made that banner years and years ago. We thought it would have been done and dusted, you know, gone. Isn't that amazing? She was so encouraged because her gifting was needlework. You see, we have gifts. God has given every one of us here gifts. Some are pastors, some are teachers, you know, all the gifts of the Spirit, but there's gifts of life as well. Some people can type. We need somebody in technology, that's for sure, because we don't know technology at all. In fact, our great-granddaughter, who's 8, tells us how to do things. I can just about do an email now. But we all have gifts, and these people brought their gifts to the Lord. Just like the people brought the bread and fish to the Lord, and he blessed it and multiplied it. So he does with our gifts. What gifts do you have today that God can use? They were so encouraged that the gift was still being used to touch lives in Walton. And I thought that was amazing. I just want to close quickly with three little things. Because we have temptations in our lives as Christians, don't we? Usually we think of temptations as tempting to do things that we shouldn't. But I want to think of it as the other way around. And the Lord really gave me this yesterday to share, so I need to just share this, that we have a temptation to give up before we start. I don't know whether you're like me, you know. It's so easy when somebody asks us to do something, we can think of 100 reasons why we shouldn't. Whether we're busy or I'm already responsible for doing the tea, I'm already responsible for this, and this. I have enough on my plate. But is it the main thing that you should be doing? I did lots of things, but you know, the Bible tells us to stick to what we're called to do. And I found very quickly on that first visit to Walton, this was a call to prison ministry. And I keep that the main thing, so other things have to work round what we do. So take a step of faith like that man there. Take a step of faith. Jump out the boat and just see maybe God's calling you to take a step of faith today. What about being tempted because you're fearful? I've been fearful, you know, because when you go into prison, you don't know who you're going to meet. But I want to tell you, you know, that I've met the most tender hearts in prison. And I've met some of the hardest hearts in church. Isn't that strange? But people are people, you know. And I remember somebody knitting on the front of a ladies' meeting. And I'm sharing about the loss of my son. And she never even looked up. You know, and you just think, didn't touch you at all. But in prison, they know, you don't have to tell them about sin. They know they're sinners. They think they don't deserve anything other than prison. Anyway, and the last one is the temptation to do something new. You know, everything I'm doing now, and for the last, it's 19 years now since Paul died, but everything I've been involved in the prisons, with the police and schools, oh gosh, I'd sooner go into a prison than face a class of kids because it's just so different. And you know what kids are like. But you know, I've seen the same Holy Spirit hold their attention. And I've seen God do things in schools as well. And I often think, you know, fear can paralyze us. And it can stop us doing what God has called us to do. I could easily have said no to prison and people would have understood. I wouldn't have had to explain a thing. But, you know, I'm so glad that God just enabled me in my weakness, in all my sobbing and tears, and such a mess that I was. He enables us, and it's become the joy of my life. They're all desperate to get out, and I'm desperate to get in. You know, it's become a place of continued comfort, because we see the same response every time. It's an amazing thing to see. I want to just sum up the whole morning with one verse in Philippians 1:12. And I want to just say, I can quote this like Paul the Apostle, but I want you to know, brethren, that of things that have happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. Amen.